House prices continually rising. First home buyers despair that they'll never be able to afford a house in a capital city. But what if you downsize, and I mean really downsize? Instead of the big suburban dream, many people are embracing the joys of tiny houses, upmarket cabins, which perhaps feature a loft bedroom, solar panels strapped all over the roof, caravan-style kitchen and bathroom. Guido Verbist has just opened a tiny display home in Sydney's Redfern. He's pushing a sustainability message with his little place because he's the general manager of the Bower Reuse and Repair Centre. David Waldridge, on the other hand, is focusing on providing housing for those who can least afford it, and he's going to build a teensy-weensy housing estate in Gosford. He's the CEO of the Tiny House Foundation. I spoke to them both last week. Apparently Australians build the biggest houses in the world, 243 square metres. How big is that, David?
It's a lot bigger than the ones we're building, Ellen. We're building 14 square metres. So, yeah, that's a sizable difference.
So how big is 243 square metres?
20 metres by 10 metres.
Ooh, that's a big house.
Well, I guess so, yeah.
And these tiny houses, Guido, are 20 times smaller than that and four times smaller than the minimum one-bedroom flat. So how small is small?
Well, that's up to the individual, how much space they think they really need to live in, how much items, how much space they need for whatever they do in their life. That's the big advantage of a tiny house. You build it as it fits your needs and your personal preferences.
And that 14 square metres that David spoke of, is that tiny in your book?
Yeah, ours is probably even smaller. The one we are currently building and we'll have on display is 2.5 metre wide by 4 long. So that's actually even smaller.
So that's basically a room.
It's one large room, yes, and you split it up in sections as you would like it. The kitchen corner, living corner, bedroom upstairs, etc. That's all how you want it yourself.
But I just want to ask, before we move on to even consider the tiny house, don't Australians love big? We want big. We want a media room and a mud room and a garage. We don't want tiny, do we, David?
Everyone's different. I think we've become accustomed to believing that that's the standard and that's what everyone sort of aspires to. But everybody's finances and situation's different, so most of us end up with what we can afford.
Mm. And Guido, who would want a tiny house?
Well, the people we interact with, the main drive for those people is that they want to live different, going back to basics, have more interaction with nature, and basically only hold on to what they really need for their life, not having storage space for plenty of items or large rooms for almost nothing in there. So that's the kind of people that are attracted, at least those that we interact with, for a tiny house.
What about you, David? Who are you pitching to?
We're using our tiny homes to try and solve homelessness. There's over 105,000 people in Australia on any given time that are homeless. Or in some form of transition of homelessness. And so we're trying to increase the availability of the housing stock right from the very, the difficult end of rough sleepers, whom I'm sure most of the listeners have seen somebody who's sort of, they either believe or are aware that living on the streets, to couch surfers, to people trying to escape domestic violence. Like, there's really a lot of entry points into homelessness. And being homeless isn't who people are. It's just the state that they find themselves in. And after a couple of big shocks in any of our lives, we could be, a lot closer to homeless than perhaps many of us would even realise.
I actually do 100% agree with this idea of helping out homeless people. That was, in fact, our original approach as well. Because we picked up on this idea from the US, where indeed that has been established as a way to help homeless people. But when we introduced it here a couple of years ago to homeless New South Wales, they were initially very keen and eager to work with us. But little by little, we came across some stumble blocks like permits where you can build or display and actually live in it. And because we couldn't find a location for that, we in the end had to turn around a little bit the concept. But that was our initial project as well. And I understand from what is happening now in Gosford that that is a unique and a great opportunity, because there you have indeed the permits and the support from the local authorities.
And that is the breakthrough, isn't it, David, that weirdly enough, if you want council consent and approvals to build a McMansion, no trouble. But if you want to build a tiny, weeny little place, what do the bureaucrats get their knickers in a twist about?
Well, I don't know. They've got a responsibility to uphold the rules, and sometimes the rules just aren't in the best interests of everybody.
What sort of rules are we talking about?
I guess at one end of the spectrum, they're designed to ensure that we have minimum standards, which is a good thing. But there's also a lot of rules that are just designed to make sure that we sort of keep up to a standard that's not necessary, but just one that we've predetermined.
Mm. David, you're the CEO of the Tiny House Foundation, and you've got this development approval to build a group of tiny houses in Gosford. It's terrific. It's very Australian. It's a housing estate. It's just teeny weeny. What are you building?
We're building 14 square metre tiny homes. There'll be four of them on a 500 square metre block of land that our council have given us for 2 years free of charge for the trial project. It's about 500 metres from the railway station and right next to Gosford Hospital. So there will be the four tiny homes themselves. There'll be a shared laundry area, shared meeting area and communal gardens on the block. And I think that the people will be surprised how nice they look and how well they work.
And it's not just the 14 square metres. You can go up, can't you?
Yeah, that's right. These Guido's one will be similar, I would imagine, is that they have quite a lot of airspace, and so you've got the opportunity to put a mezzanine or a loft level in there for sleeping or storage purposes. And so that, together with other clever design inside the units themselves, can actually make them feel a lot bigger than just their tiny footprint would suggest.
I feel like what you're describing is camping out in a corner of IKEA. It's really, really thoughtful, and you think, I could live here maybe.
Well, hopefully they'll be a little bit easier to put together than some of the things that we've all struggled with from IKEA. But, like, the principle is a good one, we're excited about where the project can head. I think just in terms of the overall landscape of affordable housing, one of the things that will just benefit us overall is to recognise that we are all different. Housing needs change depending upon a whole lot of circumstances, stages of life. And so the more viable options that we can create, then I just think the richer the tapestry of housing solutions in our society will be, and I just see that as an overall good thing. And so whether it's attending to solving homelessness at one end of the spectrum, or just being more economically responsible with resources and just sort of, you know, focusing on the important things of life, I think just to have a range of things. And so, you know, there could be really tiny, tiny, not quite so tiny. And so, you know, like these things are flexible and just open to design and people's creativity.
How much does it cost to build one of these, David?
We're going to have a finished cost of circa $30,000.
Guido Verbiest, you're the cooperative manager of the Bauer Reuse and Repair Centre. You do tiny houses too. Can you do them cheaper than 30 grand?
Probably, but ours is smaller and doesn't have all the additional features that he mentioned. So I think ours will be around 10,000. It's built on a car trailer, ours. And it's a mobile concept, so it's a slightly different approach to it, and probably difficult to compare them price-wise.
Yeah, and what's the story behind your house on a trailer?
Well, we wanted to have a mobile module or a concept, and probably something that we can build time and time again now, because we are a recycling centre, and for us it's all about demonstrating what you can do with salvage building material, and then we will auction out this tiny house in November, and so we wanted to demonstrate what you can build on the size of a car trailer, and then people can take the person who will buy it later wherever they want it to, to be stored permanently or temporarily.
And it was more than an architectural quest, it was a social one too. You started 6 months ago with some TAFE students who were Work for the Dole recipients. Were you aiming to build a house or to build skills?
No, the purpose of this program specifically, the Work for the Dole, was to train people to provide them skills, and the concept of a tiny house is a perfect module or concept to do that with, because you take them through a lot of basic skills in building, from carpentry over furniture restoration. And those are the key skills that we in our organization use ourselves and want to share with more people. So that's where the idea of a Work for the Dole program to build a tiny house came from.
And you had people come along to workshops. How many? What did they pay and what did you teach them?
It's 2 days a week that we did it for 6 weeks, and every day we had 15 people there. And they got at the end of the course, and in fact, that's what we did at the exhibition, they all were handed a Carpentry 1 certificate and a white card, which allows them to operate the introduction in safety standards for building construction areas. And then also the basics in painting and upholstery, in restoration of furniture. That's all the skills they got throughout those 6 months.
Mm. And David, you're keen to ensure that people can participate in your scheme as well, including the homeless. How are you working that through?
Well, as we go through and work with a recognised and registered housing provider on the Central Coast, they'll find potential tenants for the tiny homes, and then we'll encourage them to be involved in their build, which, as with Guido's program, we're working with TAFE Outreach also, and that will give them a certificate of attainment that will then potentially lead on to a certificate 2 in construction pathways. So valuable skills for them to pick up. So training is obviously an important thing. Our model's a housing first model, but we also recognise the value of training and employment as well. And so we're looking to establish social venture businesses that can provide sustainable long-term employment opportunities for tenants and other people on the coast as well.
And how hard is that going to be? I mean, if I sat you down and gave you a cup of coffee, would you put the back of your hand on your forehead and tell me about the terrible time you've been through with councils and all the rest of it?
No, the experience has been a good one, and we've found overwhelmingly that most people really want to help. And one of the things that has enabled us to keep the build cost down at a reasonable level is because we're getting a lot of support, both from industry, private sector, philanthropic individuals and other community organisations. And so everybody's really coming on board. This is a collaborative effort. Like, no one of us are going to solve 105,000 people, you know, being homeless. But it is something that I believe that we can solve. Like, I'm excited. I actually think that Australia could be the first nation on earth to solve homelessness.
Guido, what do you think of that?
I would 100% agree with this, and if there is one way or another that we can work together on that, I would be the first to offer our support, because that's the kind of things that we as an organization like to support. It ticks a lot of boxes about sustainability and reuse of material, and the partnership that we both have with TAFE Outreach is essential here. Because those organizations can provide the technical skills and the tickets, certificates that help those people later finding jobs. So, yeah, we partner with TAFE for a long time for exactly that reason. So, yeah, if there is an opportunity to do more of this, I would welcome that.
What about living costs? I mean, Guido, you'd be particularly interested in that with the sustainability agenda at the Bauer Reuse and Repair Centre. Mm-hmm. Is it possible to drive down costs with insulation, solar panels, that kind of thing?
Absolutely, yeah, and that's what we have. Ours has a solar panel, and we can indeed reduce costs enormously. But again, it goes back to the way, to a choice of life, how people want to live, what they really think they have to hold on to, what is essential for them to feel good in their life. So it's all about choices that people should and can make.
Do you think it'll catch on outside of homeless people and people wanting to make a radical change in their life? Can you see this becoming a way of living in our cities that are becoming unaffordable?
Probably not in city centres, but outside city centres, yes. And there are actually organisations and even community groups that start living and thinking along those lines. There is a large community in Melbourne where they all live in the same sort of on the same block of land, but all have their own little tiny house, and that's a deliberate choice to move away from the traditional lifestyle and go back to living close to nature together. So that's a choice that people can indeed make. And most of the people that come to our courses, when we run a course to build a tiny house, are exactly there for that purpose, because they want to learn how they can build one for themselves to put on a block of land somewhere or as a holiday location. I do support the logic for homeless, but there is another group as well in the tiny house movement that is interested in that aspect. And I think both have useful arguments to make.
And David, where does the Labrador go?
Well, I don't know. We don't have a Labrador, but, you know, like the Labradors have their own tiny homes as well, I guess.
Guido, any thoughts?
Well, we have a car trailer, so they can live under a car trailer, actually.
And do you two just finally see this as substantially different from just on-site cabins in caravan parks?
Look, yes and no. Obviously, from a construction and a building point of view, in many respects, a building is a building. And so it may vary in terms of design, functionality, inclusion, size, etc. But they're built according to their ultimate purpose of housing. Where I think that we differ, and Guido will obviously have a different take on this because, as you mentioned, he's on trailers and so therefore more mobile, is that, you know, we're trying to create something that people can view as their home if needs be, and so they can really base. And I know that people do live in other forms and other sites, you know, and even caravan parks, but to actually feel like this is my place and I can actually do something with this. And we're really excited about having that home equity participation model attached to ours, where people can say, look, I'm not just paying rent money here. And really, this is unheard of in the Australian model, I think, to, you know, have a landlord who's preparing to prepared to take part of your rent money and set it aside for to meet certain of your future housing needs. I think that's a revolutionary concept just in itself.
This has been a fascinating discussion. Thank you both very much for being part of it.
Thank you, Ellen.
Yeah, same. Thanks a lot.
You were listening to Guido Verbist, who's the General Manager of the Bower Reuse and Repair Centre, which has just opened a tiny display house in Sydney's Redfern, if you want to have a look. And David Waldridge is the CEO of the Tiny House Foundation, building a tiny housing estate in Gosford on the New South Wales Central Coast.
Do you guys have Barramundi here?
This is Mike and Timothy.
Potato scallops.
The unlikely hosts of a new RN podcast. It's called The Real Thing.
Oh, my, too hot.
Stories.
Intimate stories, scenes, characters, places.
Born of Australia.
We're heading out into the corners to find the real Australia.
The Real Thing.
That's us.
Subscribe now.